but unable to be here again this morning. I don't want to go into details, but I actually brought her home from hospital last night. And I've been saying to her, and our children have been saying to her, look, everything about you is repairable. Everything about you is repairable. It takes time, but things can be fixed up. And what I've added to that is, as I've spoken to her, is completely unlike the five families of those five children who were killed in Tasmania. That's not repairable. It's permanent. And it'd be hard to find a person who heard that news who wasn't moved, deeply moved, at the grief that they must be experiencing at the terrible tragedy. Sometimes when we're moved like that, you actually do get a bit of a feeling in your stomach region or thereabouts. You are so disturbed. You have a physiological sort of response, sort of here in your gut. In the Greek language, there are a couple of words which really deal with that feeling that you have as your heart goes out to somebody in distress. I'm not very good at any language, so I'm not going to pronounce it correctly, but for instance, the verb, the doing word, it's actually a bit hard for us to say. It goes something like splekknistamai. And I think it's supposed to reverberate. It is supposed to reverberate as to the feeling that you might have in your gut. There's a noun, sphlegnon, and it is supposed to sort of exemplify your innards, your innards. It actually can be translated, and it is in some English Bibles, in Acts chapter 1, I think it is, it's actually translated intestines, the word itself intestines. But normally, the noun we would translate in the New Testament to something like deep feeling, or just the word compassion. So it's interesting, in that language you've got a couple of words, a verb and a noun, which relate in a sense to feeling very much so. a deep feeling, a disturbed feeling. And I thought it would be interesting one day for me, some time ago, I thought, I wonder how the verb, which we would probably translate slightly differently depending upon its context, but the verb to be moved with compassion. You need the sense of movement. I just wondered to myself some time ago, I wonder how that Greek word, the noun and the verb, how they're used in the New Testament. And I came across something exceedingly interesting, and I'm not sure how to explain it. The verb is found entirely in the Gospels. To be moved with deep feeling, to be moved with compassion. You don't find it in the letters of Paul, for instance, or whatever. You don't find it in the Acts of the Apostles, but you find it in the Gospels, where every single instance is surrounding Jesus to some way or other. It's either Jesus is talking about it, or they're talking about Jesus, or someone else is talking to Jesus about it. Now, it's very interesting that the verb you find only in the Gospels, and the noun, with one exception, you only find in the Epistles. The idea of having deep feeling, of having of there being compassion, except for one oddity, which it occurs in a little prophetic sort of song of Zechariah, the father of John the Immerser. I always prefer to call him John the Immerser, by the way. I think it's so much better translation. But anyway, that'll do. Now let's have a look at the way the notion of to be filled with compassion, to be moved with compassion, how that occurs with respect to Jesus. And there are three settings in which it occurs, three settings. In some of the parables that he taught, he mentions it. When he's dealing with a crowd, it gets mentioned. And then with his healing people on a few occasions, it gets mentioned. I think it occurs 12 times. A couple of times it's really dealing with the same matter, but in two different Gospels. So it's about, you know, you're looking at about 11 or so occasions. There's one occasion, for instance, where it actually has a person coming to Jesus, and he's in real trouble, a family problem, a terrible, terrible family problem. And he says, please, you know, have compassion on my son. Be moved so much that you do something for my son is the sort of thing that is said. But look, in the parables of Jesus, one of the parables we heard just then, and I don't want to go into the whole thing, but I thought it would be wrong not to actually have the whole thing about the servant who gets forgiven, the debt is waived. By the way, Jesus often told stories which are just out of this world. They're complete exaggerations. You know they're complete exaggerations. In this account, we have a servant of a king. Must have been a fairly high-ranking servant, and he absconds with 10,000 talents. Now, it's hard for us to know today what that's worth, but probably in the area of a billion or more. It's $1 billion. Now, yeah, what opportunity does anybody have to nick off with, you know, and he's a slave or a servant with $1 billion? And the king who's recounting says, whoa, what do I do with this fellow? I'm going to sell him, his wife, or everything he owns, you know, to pay me back. Well, now he's not going to be paid back. It's just that everything that this bloke is and owns is gone. And in the parable that Jesus tells, the man falls down and begs the king, you know, have mercy on me. And then in Jesus' parable, it says the king moved with compassion. He's very disturbed at this wretched fellow. And he wipes what, the word that's used is he wipes what we'll call a loan, waved aside. Later on, he will refer to it as a debt when he throws him into prison because of the way he treats another servant of the king. But there you go, one of the parables. The parable of the Good Samaritan. By the way, the notion of the Good Samaritan, that phrase does not occur in the scriptures. It's often there as a heading to the parable, which we insert. I don't think it's all that helpful. You might. I think actually you're better off if you said something like the almost, or forget the word almost, the impossibly Good Samaritan. It's in the story that Jesus tells about, you know, the priest goes by, there's this wretched person who's been attacked by bandits, he's been bruised, he's been stripped, he's lost everything, and the priest goes by and the Levite goes by, and along comes a Samaritan. And Jesus is telling this to Jewish people, and they are identifying the man who's been waylaid and bruised and lied, bleeding, left for dead. They identify that as a Jew, and along comes a Samaritan, has moved with compassion, towards a Jew. You've got to be joking. See, it's Jesus doing one of these, telling one of these stories that's just way over the top, way over the top. He's moved with compassion. So for Jesus, the notion of being deeply moved is important. It comes out, you see, in three parables. We've just had those two. The third parable is the parable of the prodigal son. Again, not a great heading. If we called it something like the parable of the two lost sons, we'd be nearer to the truth of the parable. But I'm sure we're all familiar with it. What happens is this wretched son, having lost everything, his father seems to be on the lookout for him every day. I wonder if he'll ever come home. Will this son of mine, this younger son, ever come home? Is the way you picture the story as Jesus tells it. And then he sees his son afar off. And in the parable that Jesus tells, he is moved with compassion. He runs, unseemly for an older Jewish man to be running. He has to pick up the skirts of his robe in order to do that, unseemly. But oh, forget all that. He's moved with compassion towards his son who's coming home. He runs towards him. He embraces him and he kisses him on both cheeks because he's moved with compassion. They're the three parables where it comes out. with crowds. Crowds every now and again do get us, don't they? We see them on TV. In fact, the TV is often interested in picking up crowds and telling us a bit about them, what they're doing, foolishly or otherwise. Crowds get your attention. And there are three different settings. There are about four or five settings, but there are three basically different settings where Jesus is dealing with a crowd and he's moved with compassion. He feels for them as a crowd. In other words, it's not as though he picks out you or me, an individual, and is moved, but it just says seeing the crowd. In other words, a mass of people disturbs Jesus deeply. And on one occasion, being moved with compassion, he sees them as sheep without a shepherd. Another little description, another gospel, lost and helpless. And what does he do? He teaches them. The world needs to have knowledge. The most important knowledge in the world is knowledge about ourselves and our God and his Son. And Jesus, moved with compassion, teaches them. On another occasion, it says he's moved with compassion as he sees this crowd of 4,000 people. They've been following him, listening to him for 3 days. And it's recorded, he says, I can't send them home. They'll faint by the way. They haven't had a decent meal. And moved with compassion, he does something extraordinary. He feeds them. Then there's another occasion where it's moved with the crowd. It's possibly the 5,000, I think. And he sees people who are sick. They're ill. And he heals them, moved with compassion. And so that moves us on to the third one, just the third last one, where Jesus is described of him that he is this so deeply disturbed with people, with people who are ill. We don't like people being ill, do we? I mean, if it's close family, I don't like... I was told that perhaps my wife wouldn't be able to be home for Christmas and so on. And the idea of just being by myself, I found that very difficult to cope with. Well, Jesus is confronted with people who deeply moved him because they were ill. And he did something about it. There was this leper, was it? Who said to Jesus, if you can make me clean. And it says Jesus moved with compassion, touches him. That's interesting, by the way. The touch, he touches him. And he's clean. Wow, wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't that be wonderful for any of loved one that you have? If you're disturbed by them, if they were just dealt with like that. But he's moved with compassion. Then there is the blind people. It's a bit hard to know exactly. It's to do with Jericho, whether he's going in or out, whether it's old Jericho or new Jericho. It's a bit of a problem in how to interpret the text, but that's not very important. There are people crying out to him, Son of David, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on us, have mercy on us. And the crowd tries to still them, keep quiet. It's a big enough crowd as it is. He's got enough to handle. You can imagine the things that go through people's minds. And Jesus stops and he said, what do you want me to do for you? Well, what do you think you're going to say? Lord, to be given back our sight. I don't understand what it must be like for a person to be blind. Blind from birth, for instance, and then to be given, it must be an extraordinary phenomenon. I don't know about these two in particular, whether they are blind from birth, but they wanted their sight. And again, he touches them. And their sight is restored. And then there's that reading that we had about the widow of Nain. When Jesus, with a great crowd with him, when Jesus actually comes to this, little town, there's a funeral procession coming out of it. There's a little crowd there as well. Just a little crowd. And there's this woman, and Jesus must somehow or other perceive that, either be things that were said in the crowd or otherwise, I'm not sure, but she's a widow. She has no husband. And she has one son, and he's dead. Imagine if we were a Jew in that world, what's it going to be like for that woman? No husband, no son. Unless she had somehow or other extraordinarily good financial backup from family or independently of family, she's going to have to go and beg just to survive in her world. And when Jesus sees this procession coming out, it says, he was moved with compassion. He stops the sort of stretcher. He touches and says, come on, young man, up you get. And the fellow sits up and speaks. Why is Jesus so compassionate? On this occasion, the crowd were absolutely amazed. Of course they were absolutely amazed. And they began to say things like, wow, a great prophet has arisen in our midst. God has visited his people. Why was Jesus so compassionate? Why is being moved with compassion so strong? Well, you see, it occurs in Zechariah's little speech as well, speaking from the Old Testament perspective, our God is merciful. Our God is long-suffering. A sun, light is about to dawn in this world. Someone's going before his own son to be born. There will be salvation brought to the people of God through the forgiveness of sins. Light will shine in the dark places, the shadow of death. Why? Why? Because God, our God, is compassionate. And Jesus is compassionate because his Father is compassionate. Every single one of us should say to ourselves, why would God choose me to be one of his people? Why would God come and visit in the person of his son, this son, to die for me? Why should God be moved with compassion for a person like me? It's just the nature of God and his son that he should so care for us. We can only say, thank you. Thank you very, very much for touching me. I forgot last week, my wife reminded me, you didn't give people opportunity to ask questions. So I was really dealt with severely. You might have some questions or some comments. Please feel free. I'll see what I can do. And then I'll pass them on to the chief. If they're too hard, he can handle them. Bit of a hard one to maybe make some comments on or ask questions, but if you wanted to. Yeah, okay. And I'm hearing's not great, though.
Sorry. So many people accuse God of not being compassionate because he allows suffering.
Yeah.
What can you say to them?
Yeah, it's a hard one. That's one, a very difficult question.
Okay,
the question is that so many people ask the question of God, why is there so much suffering? If he's so compassionate, how would you answer that? That's a very hard one. I think anyone who raises that question, that's the important thing, anyone who raises that question needs to be informed about the gospel message itself. In other words, not giving a direct answer to the question, I know, but it's saying, whatever answer we would give, and then you might want to say something, but whatever answer you would give, your world is a world in which you will need to turn to the creator of the world, the one who rules the world. You will need, for instance, to look at those gospel records. You will need to take into account that there were lots of people who had their only son die in the world. But here was one instance where Jesus, the Son of God, moved with compassion, dealt with it. So whatever answer you might give to the question, the person needs to be directed to, you need to look at the gospel records and you need to make up your mind what you are going to do with this person who actually did die for you and for all of humanity. Okay, then that needs to be done, you know, almost independently of any answer to the question. But with respect to the question, you can say some things. The world at large, humanity at large, is a sick world. It's a decaying world. It's a hard world. It's a hurtful world. To be honest with you, I would rather that my wife didn't have this accident and that there was nothing to be dealt with. That would be wonderful. But the world at large, for anybody, everybody, Christian or not, you know, whatever their religion, perspectives on God or anything else, it's a hard world. And in the end, you die. Why would God create a circumstances and allow circumstances such that this would be the case? If you go to the book of Genesis, you start to get the answer. It's so that we will be reminded that we are just creatures. That God is the creator and we need to turn to him. Sickness, sadness, sorrow, terrible things are meant to turn us to him. It's God's reminder. It's a continual reminder. There's no escaping. But rather than lash out with God and say, well, I don't want a God like you because you're so cruel, you say, God, have mercy on me and teach me what's the most important stuff in the world, that is how to relate to him, not my health. There are a couple of things. I don't know. But that's a hard one, and I understand. You can understand a person who's suffered personal tragedy very recently. You've got to be very careful and you would be praying a lot about what to say or what not to say, and sometimes just a loving arm around somebody who might actually be very angry with God might be the best thing to do. Rather than have a little chat, you might just have a loving arm and care and hope that one day the person might say, why would you care for me? Because God has cared for us. I reckon that's enough for a question. Unless there's someone else who's got a burning thing. Okay. Thanks for putting up with me.